I need to have everybody seated. For everyone, but there are some more seats up front. If you want to, I'm sorry we can't accommodate everyone, but please come forward. There are still a few seats up front. We need to get started. Okay. Number six in alphabetical order are, can I have quiet, please? Michelle Osterreich, I'm sorry. No clapping until the end of the evening. Thank you. Okay, Michelle is on the Democratic Working Families and Women's Equality lines. And we have James Tedisco on the Republican, Conservative, Independence, and Reform Party lines. Okay, I'll allow that because the other ones did. But no more. Okay, all right. Now, it is time to hear their two-minute opening statements. They've drawn lots to determine the order, and I believe Michelle is first.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much to the League of Women Voters for getting us together tonight in this forum, and especially for every year giving us the opportunity to learn about the issues that are important to us and the candidates that hope to represent us. Thank you to my husband of 21 years for his unending support, and thank you to everyone for coming. We now know how important it is that we actively participate in our democracy and learn about the issues and vote. I'm Michelle Osterreich, and I'm running for the 49th Senate District because I have a vision. I have a vision of our schools being fully funded, of being able to take our sick kids to the doctor, of clean air and water, having our kids be able to find jobs that pay a living wage so that they can settle down and buy a house near mom. I've heard you. I've stood at your doorstep and I've heard you talk about your blessings and your struggles. I've been honored by your trust and awed by how much the folks of the 49th have in common. We want civility in our leaders, transparency in our government, and the security of knowing that our hard-earned tax dollars are being invested back in our communities. I've been a lawyer, a community organizer and builder, and a mom. I will work as hard for you as I do for my family, and I can't wait to hear the questions that you have tonight, the specific issues that are on your mind. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle. Maybe you weren't here for the original instructions, but we don't clap until the end of the evening after the closing statements. So we can get more questions and answers from the candidates. Jim.
Yes, is this working? All right. I want to thank the League of Women Voters.
It doesn't sound like it's on. Is it? Is it on?
This is not working? Who sabotaged my mic?
Joe was sitting there.
I'm going to give you this one. Can I start again?
Okay. Start again, please.
I'm used to a 24-second clock. I can get a lot of shots up in that time. First of all, let me thank the League of Women Voters. Let me thank Ann for this moderation. She's doing being the moderator. Let me thank Michelle for caring about our representative democracy and wanting to be a public servant. And let me thank all of you for caring about this republic and this representative democracy. And your concern for using that tremendous privilege we have to vote, to come out and choose your form of government. You know, I've been away from home quite a bit this year. We had session, and then we moved right into the election. And I want to thank, above and beyond everything, my wife, Mary Song Tedisco, for putting up with that. The other day at dinner, she gave me a message, and I think I understand it clearly. She put a big jug, a gallon of milk on there, and she taped my picture to it. So we're going to reunite after this thing. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be a part of your lives, for supporting me in so many ways. You know my values. I know your values because I interact with you so much. The fact of the matter is this may be the most important election ever in the history of New York State. We're talking about maybe not having representative democracy anymore. 90% of our government is controlled by one region, one party affiliation, one voice. We're the one majority that is a checks and balance. It's not good for any level to have one voice or one political affiliation. Example, we stopped with a one-vote majority, $1.5 billion this year in taxes. That was extremely important. If there's any indication that I'm doing pretty well as a public servant, it was the first election Michelle and me had earlier this year. It was for the Reform Party, designated as the individual who would be independent, stand up to the status quo, reform state government, and change the quality of lives. I won that Reform Party election by 72%, 3-1. But the most interesting thing about that, for the first time, non-affiliated voters were able to vote. And those are the individuals who vote for the person and on issues. And I'm extremely proud of that. And I hope to do more in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. All right. Now it's time for questions from the audience. And as you recall, or maybe you weren't here, the candidates will have 1.5 minutes to answer the question. You are not required to respond, and you have been given, okay, you have been given 2 red cards to add 1.5 minutes to your response or to respond to something someone else has said. Are we getting two good mics now? Okay. The red cards may not be used in the closing statements, and there's only 2. So choose your time wisely. Questions will be directed to the candidates in rotation so everyone gets a chance to respond first. Please read your questions. Should take no longer than 30 seconds. All right, go.
Hi, my name is Meg Messett. I'm from Saratoga Springs High School where there is a bullying problem. I have personally been a victim of bullying, both at school and on social media. What, if anything, can you do to help students like me?
First answerer is Michelle.
Thank you, Meg. I'm very sorry for your experience. Bullying is all too often in our high schools and in our schools, and it is a very important issue that we need to take care of. One program that I'm really proud of that's in our public schools right now is the Anti-Defamation's No Place for Hate. And I've talked to many students who have been so helped by the fact that that program is active in their school systems. I would love for that program to be statewide. That is a goal of mine. More importantly, I'd like to talk a little bit about Jacob's Law, which my opponent has supported and sponsored. The problem that happened with Jacob's Law is a real tragedy. The senator had 5 years to work on this bill, and because he failed to consider different voices, namely the LGBT community, the bill failed this past session. It's really unfortunate. If he had included more voices when he drafted that bill and while he was shepherding it through our state Senate and helping it through the assembly, and if he'd been a strong advocate against bullying, that bill would be law by now. I pledge, when I am senator, to pick up that bill, make sure it is inclusive, that it includes children's right to talk to the school administrators, and make sure that if they're at risk, because frankly, there are parents that bully too, if they're at risk by notifying their parents, that's included in the bill too. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Jim?
Thank you. Well, everybody's got a right to their own opinion. They don't have the right to their own set of facts. And if you want to endear yourself as a public servant to your constituents and be taken seriously, you have to be truthful. The fact of the matter is, I've got Assemblywoman Fahey sponsoring with this bill in the Assembly. I've passed it 3 times in the Senate. And Michelle, you're mistaken. We have a portion of this bill which says any child who is being bullied has to be interviewed by a mental health professional. And if she says or he says he or she is not outed by the parents and has a concern, they do not have to tell the parents or involve the parents. And listen, this is a great program. I see the Golubs back there. They've informed me and educated on that program. No Place to Hate is very important. But to help No Place to Hate, we have to inform the parents. And I took the obligation to stand up and say, we want you involved with the school. We want you involved with the curriculum. We want you at the PTA. We want to report this to the State Education Department. But we leave the parents out. Raise your hand in here if you do not want to know that your child is being bullied or is a bully. Raise your hand. Nobody. I asked the same question in the New York State Assembly. Nobody raised their hand. I asked the same question in the New York State Senate. Nobody raised their hand. Michelle, if it was such a bad bill, why did it pass almost unanimously in the New York State Senate, where you want to be? We need to pass it in the New York State Assembly, where there's a Democratic control 3-1. And I was able to pass it 3 times, and that caveat to protect that group of diversity, is in there.
Thank you, Jim.
So that's a mistruth.
Thank you. Next question. If you can sort of stay, the question is stay in the back so other people can see. Just that's it's. No room back, okay, all right, sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Linnell. I'm from Niskayuna, and my question is this. I've noticed on some of the campaign mailings making reference to downstate special interests clearly in a negative fashion. That made me actually do a little bit of digging into your supporters, each of you, to find out that the top donors for Senator Todisco all seem to be very heavily weighted towards PACs and businesses, while Ms. Austerlitz, yours seem to be individuals. Can you tell us, for you, Senator Todisco, who are those special interests? And for Ms. Austerlitz, do you have and what are your connections to downstate?
We will start with Jim.
Yeah. As I said, 90% of this government is controlled by downstate. If you look at the map, 28 out of the 31 Democrats live downstate in the city. 28 Republicans live upstate. If we lose that representative democracy, let me tell you who they are. The comptroller, the attorney general, the governor, the assembly, 2-1 Democrat, all downstate interest. We're the last bastion. I was able to get $12 million to the 49th senatorial district because we had a majority of one. We were able to stop $1.5 billion in taxes because we had a majority of one more elected official as a check and balance. 200,000 people left the state of New York because of regulations, mandates, the cost of workers' compensation and taxation. But the DOH in Boston Spa took your tax dollars and sent an employee out there to hassle a boy who was selling lemonade off his front porch. Is that Mr. Prococo out there who is next to the office of Governor Cuomo? There's where the criminals are, not a little boy selling lemonade. That was a microcosm of what we do to small businesses in upstate New York. If we regulate a child, and the governor came out and said, oh, I'll help this. I'll buy a permit for him. When has anybody in this room needed a permit to sell lemonade? I never did. Is that what the state of New York has come to? Is that the overreach we have right now? We need a voice for upstate New York. And if I read this endorsement by the Gazette, one of our papers, I am that voice that stands up for upstate New York. It says, Todisco, a scrappy, effective state senator.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Okay, Michelle.
Thank you, Linnell, for that question. So 700 real people who are located in our district or have strong ties to our district donated to my campaign. Downstate is not where I've lived. It's not where I live now. Upstate is the only home my children have ever known, and I am so proud to live here. I feel very sorry for Senator Todisco by how jaded he is about the control by downstate. I wonder how he would feel being the minority senator when the Senate flips to Democratic control and what that will mean to the interest of downstate, I think it's preferable to have a Democrat in a democratically majority Senate. But another thing, I can't help but point out Senator Tedisco's insistence on protecting lemonade stands is not a downstate or an upstate value. The truth is, that family was raising money to help a family with healthcare costs. You know what an upstate value is? Making sure that families don't file for bankruptcy because they can't afford to pay their mortgage and their medical bills. That's upstate, and I will proudly represent upstate on this and many other issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Next question.
I'm Roberta, and I'm from Schenectady. I would like to hear about the candidate's position on the Reproductive Health Act and the Comprehensive Contraception Coverage Act, and how you would feel about a person of a different gender inserting themselves into your personal health care decisions.
This goes to Michelle first.
Thank you, Roberta. The Reproductive Health Act and the Contraceptive Care Act are very important to me because I have two daughters, and I wish for them all access to family planning so that they can make their choices, live their life fully, and succeed. That's really important to me. I am pro-choice, always have been, and I've supported Planned Parenthood for most of my adult life. The Reproductive Health Act is important because right now, abortion sits in the criminal code. What that means is because of the attacks on reproductive rights coming out of DC right now and the very possible likelihood that Roe v. Wade could be overturned in our lifetime, it means that in New York, providers who offer abortion services face criminal liability if it's not removed and put into the health code where it exists. This is healthcare. And then as for the Comprehensive Contraceptive Care Act, that would require insurers to cover contraception. That's a no-brainer. That makes all of us healthier, giving us choices that we deserve. And frankly, I can't imagine an argument against it, especially when we continue to see attacks on our reproductive rights, including healthcare and contraception, coming out of DC. Senator Tedisco has solidly stated the opposite his entire political career. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Well, first of all, I support reproductive health care. The fact of the matter is this bill is not about reproductive health care. That is settled right now. It's settled by the Supreme Court. It's very unlikely and not going to change nationally. It's not going to change in New York State. What is going to change with this bill? It's very condescending to talk about this bill. It's about abortion rights and codification. What this bill would do is add to that codification, and we've always come to this conclusion, pro-life or pro-choice. If it's legal, we want to make it safe for the mother. This bill makes it unsafe for the mother. It allows non-professionals, non-trained medical people, non-doctors to do abortions. It also doesn't protect the sanctity of the child in the body if a mother is harmed or murdered and the child is murdered. It makes it a violation now. And look, let me say this one last thing. Every single person in this room agrees on one issue, whether you're pro-life or pro-choice. And if you're not, raise your hand. We all believe we'd like to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies. Am I wrong on that? I'm not talking about the life of the mother. I'm not talking about rape or incest. I'm talking about unwanted pregnancies. We're supposed to be problem solvers. We pay more money each year to pay away the problem for poor mothers who have an unintended pregnancy. How about putting money into education programs, innovative, put them in Planned Parenthood, put them in our libraries, put them in the schools to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies. That's the only reason we lead to a decision about abortion.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Next question. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't see. Red card. Right.
So I do appreciate you advocating for additional funds for sex ed. I think that's very important. But I want to make it very clear that a vote for the Reproductive Health Act isn't about preventing, or a vote against it, isn't about preventing abortion. It's about putting women's lives at risk. That's the bottom line. We all know that to be true. And unless we can pass the Comprehensive Care Act and the Reproductive Health Act, women's lives will continue to be at risk.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. All right, next question.
My name is Pat. I'm from Clifton Park. Question is about the tax cap. Do you support the tax cap, and do you think it should be permanent?
And this question goes first to Jim.
You know, this is the endorsement by the Schenectady Gazette, and it says, Tedisco, a scrappy, effective state senator. I think what they meant by that is I not only stood up for the concerns of the 49th senatorial district or when I worked in the assembly, but I stood up to the most powerful elements in New York State. Before Sheldon Silver was shackled behind his back and was touted off to jail, I stood up to him on the property tax cap in New York State. He refused to talk about property taxes. I debated him at his own press conference. I authored the first property tax bill. I got it passed. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen? It has saved the 49th senatorial district $344 million over the years and $25 billion over the years across the state. Here's what the Gazette says. He's been on the right side of legislation regarding the property tax cap, of which he was an original sponsor, saving taxpayers in his district more than $344 million. It's nice to talk the talk, but it's more important to have the facts. And I have the facts here. But I didn't stop there. When I was outnumbered 3-1 in the assembly, I passed Proposition 2. I bet you 70% of you voted for it. I got all the paper off our desks. I protected the 70 towns who are in the Adirondack Park in their forest land, and we saved $13 million a year. We have tablets on our desk. You know what they call those tablets when they want to call the sergeant of arms to fix it? Could you fix my Jimmy over here? They named it after me because I saved $13 million in our environment.
Thank you. Michelle.
So the tax cap is an important piece of legislation, but like any law, it needs to be revisited every once in a while, because what's happened with the tax cap is that it penalizes successful municipalities. I've talked to leaders across this district involved in the budget for their towns and cities, and what happens is when, right now, you've noticed that a lot of budgets are coming in at 1% or less, that's because the voters demand it. But also, if you're successful and your town is growing and you've got greater revenue and more businesses, you actually have to go above that tax cap by the very nature of the calculation. That's why we need to revisit it. And I know it's complicated, the formula and all, but it takes real courage to go back and say, you know what, we need to look at this law again. It was good when it was passed, but now it's time to revise it. High taxes are a problem in this state. I've talked to business owners and individuals that are really struggling locally, but there's so many things that we can do to alleviate the high taxes. One thing that is not going to help high taxes is the estate tax relief, the relief from the estate tax repeal that Senator Tedisco has offered. It would actually rob our state of $1.3 billion. And where do you think that's going to be made up from? It's a tax that helps the very, very wealthy and penalizes us, the middle class and the lower income. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. And we have a red card.
Yeah, it doesn't take courage to increase taxes. It takes stupidity in New York State. We lost 200,000 people from the state this last year. It was not the weather that made them leave. We lost 1 million over the last 10 years. Let me tell you what the Senate Republicans did. And by the way, we have a pilot program of what takes place when the other side takes over and there's one voice. In 2008, they increased 124 taxes and fees, $14 billion in new taxes, $14 billion in new spending. They eliminated the STAR rebate program, $3 billion taken away from taxpayers, created a $10 billion budget deficit. That's when the Democrats took over and we had one voice in New York State. When we came back, we cut 88 taxes, over $12 billion in total cuts. We kept spending within a 2% property tax a cap in 2% spending cap. We capped property taxes, saving taxpayers $37 billion, and we closed a multi-billion dollar budget deficit of new taxes. And guess what? In 2008, when they spent that $14 billion, guess where they got the money from? I brought $12 million back to my district, a lot of money for education and programs for education, $85,000 for a backpack program for weekends for kids that don't get food, $250,000 for a YWCA so they could continue with domestic violence help for women who need that assistance. We need to keep a majority that's going to stand up for the people in upstate New York in our district.
Thank you, Jim. Next question.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'm from Niskayuna, and I have a question for both candidates. What's your position on conversion therapy for children under the age of 18?
And this question goes first to Michelle.
Thank you, Robin. Conversion therapy, for those of you who don't know, is an incredibly harmful practice. It tries to convert gay people to being straight, and it does that by horrible therapies, physical abuse, shock therapy, beating. I can't possibly describe to you what I've heard from those who have been harmed by conversion therapy. My opponent refused to ban conversion therapy in minors. These are our children. We should be teaching them about self-love, confidence, giving them the self-esteem to be successful, not harming them to such great extent. Discrimination and bias in any form is unacceptable, but certainly what we're doing to our young kids with conversion therapy is just unjustifiable. So thank you.
First and foremost, there's nobody who cares about children more than me. I was an educator. I'm one of the few people that stood in the classroom and they can stand up on the floor of the Assembly and Senate and know what it's like to teach kids who are vulnerable. I was a special education teacher. We ask parents to do a lot right now. We'll ask them and talk about joining the PTA, coming for meetings with teachers, helping with curriculum. But we want to take from them their responsibility to even know if their child is being bullied. And in this case, tell them what kind of health care they can provide for their young people. I don't think that's appropriate. Way back, I was the chairman of a task force on child abduction and missing children. And I called Governor Cuomo's office. I said, we want to find more children. We want to make sure that they get back to their homes. I said, why can't we be the first state in the nation to use our throughway transportation system to track down children? Because what I learned is that you have to get messages across long distances to be able to find and track them down. He came. We had a press conference. We were out handing out the tickets. And I always kept this in my pocket. I thought I'd bring it in. This is a copy of a throughway toll way back when we did this. This is the first picture of the missing girl we put on it. We found this girl in Buffalo, New York, 2 weeks later after we put this program on there. I care about children in every way. I wouldn't have done Jacob's Law if I didn't. I wouldn't have 15 bills I supported and sponsored with Mary Lyle, who helped change the dynamics of abductions and accidents and violence on campuses.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Next question.
Good evening and thank you for this opportunity. Because of the Trump administration, my name is Judy and I'm from Niskayuna. Because of the Trump administration, I am terrified that within the next year, we will lose ACA protection for pre-existing conditions. In my family, we have diabetes, asthma, and other issues, and this could cost my family thousands of dollars on top of what we already pay. And my question is, what can you do to make sure my family can afford medical care?
All right, this question first goes to Jim.
Okay. Yeah, the government program we have for health care right now simply doesn't work. And the reason why it doesn't work is based on the wrong premise. Young people were never going to spend $5,000 to $10,000 to buy insurance. They're young, they're healthy, they paid the penalty, $600. And what happened for the catastrophic illnesses for seniors and for others who go beyond the copays and their limits, They were forced to come up with insurance policies which were very costly. Here's the answer to what I think we should be doing. We have an EPIC program. Medication is very expensive. We increase the income levels for singles and families together. It's a great program. We need EDIC, and I sponsor EDIC, elderly dental insurance coverage. My mother was 97. I don't know how many of you have a dental insurance, but if you have dental insurance, it's still so costly. Imagine a senior, what a senior citizen has to pay. That is a sister program, EPIC and EDIC, but we need four other things. Competition across state lines for premiums. We need insurance companies to really compete, not monopolies in interstates. We need healthcare savings accounts. So young people invest, don't have to pay in taxes. They're incentivized to invest that money because they're not paying taxes on it. And doctor, we need tort reform. We don't need doctors doing 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 unnecessary tests to protect their well-being and their financial well-being, and their malpractice costs go up. And we need best practices to go along with that tort reform. Because if we have best practices and good tort reform, we'll do the best tests and we'll get the best services. We'll be healthier, less costly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Judy. I'm going to take a minute and just respond to the fact that although Senator Dodisco can certainly say that he cares deeply for children, he voted against banning conversion therapy. Now, with regard to healthcare, I feel your pain. I've been around the district, and I met a man who told me about his father-in-law who refused to get healthcare because he didn't have insurance, and he only was able to get on a plan on the exchange after the ACA was passed, in time to get on hospice and die in comfort. Our health insurance system is broken, and Senator Dodisco's piecemeal sort of, I don't know, small band-aids on the problem is nowhere near the holistic response that we could have in New York. We can have universal health care so that no one needs to worry about pre-existing conditions, so that everybody can go to the doctor when they're sick, go to their primary care, specialist care, take their medicines when they need them. It is affordable. We are paying for it already. It is about capturing the costs, and it's humane. It's what we do for each other. So thank you for that incredibly important question, because healthcare is the number one issue I see every single day. People worried, honestly, about filing for bankruptcy or worse. So thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
I'm so envious of Michelle.
Another red card.
And other candidates who come out, and they don't really call it universal healthcare or single payer. They call it free healthcare, and you're going to get free housing, and you're going to get free tuition, and you're going to get free cell phones. Ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing that's free. In fact, I've got the report here from the RAND Corporation. Can you imagine wanting government to control your health care? Government, no more CDPHP, no more empire, no more competition whatsoever. How is your government doing with Social Security? How is your government doing with the Postal Service here? Did you go to the DMV lately? How is your government doing with that? Do you really want government $140 billion tax increase? It's not refutable. And we already have a pilot program. Vermont went to it. Vermont was the cheddar cheese state until they went for 1 year with free health care, single payer. You know what they became? The Swiss cheese state. 10 pounds of Swiss cheese holes they had in their budget. That's how much they were blown up the budget with going to their single payer. They eliminated it after 1 year. California, the most liberal progressive state in the nation, refuses to go for it. Ladies and gentlemen, a $140 billion tax increase, tripling the taxes in New York State. Across the nation, it's in the trillions of dollars. That's just a giveaway. It's never going to work. It's a failure. The RAND report has reported it that way, and we've had the experience. Luckily, we didn't do it. Vermont did it.
Thank you, Jim. All right. Another red card. Okay, sorry.
Sorry.
Can I buy one of your red cards?
Good luck. I am not saying our health care will be free. We are already paying for it. We pay for it when you get your hospital bill, and there's a $10 charge for a Band-Aid. We are paying for it in our co-pays and our employers' premiums that go up and up uncontrollably every single year. What I'm talking about is not government controlled. It's government insurance. It's regulating an industry that's not regulating itself, that's not giving us products that offer coverage at all. And frankly, Senator Todisco sat on the Health Committee his first session in the Senate, and he has done nothing to help our struggling families. It is time we have somebody who has vision, that's not so afraid to have this difficult conversation, to talk about the New York Health Act, to put it in committee. I'm not saying that's what's going to end up at the end of the road, but we have to have the conversation. We owe it to our families. It's the number one reason families are filing for bankruptcy. This is unacceptable. We cannot continue along this path. Our businesses can't handle it. Our business growth is stunted because small business owners want to help their employees. They want to make sure that their employees get coverage, and they can't. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. And now we have a question.
Hi, my name is Sunny. I'm from Niskayuna. An extreme risk protection order would prevent people found to be dangerous to themselves or others from purchasing or possessing firearms, rifle, or shotgun. A bill to implement ERPO in New York State passed the Assembly but never got out of committee for a full vote in the Senate. The ERPO order, implementation of ERPO would be a small part of the criminal justice and court system already in place, so the costs would be no significant financial burden. Senator Todisco, if you're reelected to the Senate, do you pledge to get the ERPO bill out of committee
quickly
for a full vote in the New York State Senate, and not only to vote for it, but help whip votes so that you can pass it? And Ms. Osterlich, do you pledge to do the same?
Let's see, we're starting with Michelle.
Thank you, Sunny. I'm a gun owner. The United States Supreme Court has held that there is an individual right to own guns, but it's not unlimited. And in our state, I am so proud that New York is part of a consortium of states studying gun violence and gun death. In New York, 900 people die every single year from guns. Half of those are suicide. Extreme risk protection orders are very important. They would allow families to petition courts to remove guns from an individual who is at risk for harming themselves and others. And after full due process, and I'm a lawyer, I understand what that means. As a gun owner, I believe in responsible gun ownership and reasonable gun safety measures like ERPO. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Jim?
Yeah, you should know that the SAFE Act banned a gun in New York State.
I'm just asking about ERPO.
Is she debating me or not? Come on up, the water's warm here.
The questioner does not converse with...
I just wanted to clarify what I'm saying.
Could I start my time over again?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the SAFE Act banned a gun that injured less people in New York State than hammers and hard objects, okay? This is a one-dimensional political approach to what should be a holistic approach to public safety. Now, it's not a bad idea. I think you're on the right track. But you can't... I carry this with me all the time. It's the Constitution of the United States of America. It's got a First Amendment, and we see what the president's doing now, and it's got a 14th Amendment, and they count. So you've got to have the legitimate information on an individual, but if you're going to do this, you can't just confiscate firearms and say, now that has changed the mindset, this person doesn't want to hurt themselves or their family or their domestic partner. Yes, they still do. So you need required psychological evaluation and mental treatment. And I think you need the leg bracelets. You've got to know where these people are. If you're just going to take away their firearms and their weapons and say, well, everybody's going to be safe now. You know what that is? A false sense of security for the potential victims and a false sense of security for the authorities. Because when that person walks out and goes and gets a weapon from his cousin, his brother, his father, which has happened, or gets in a car, or takes his wife up to the second floor or a loved one and pushes them out the window, and you go to the authorities and they say, why didn't you stop this? Well, we took away their firearms, but you didn't require, and the legislature is not in this bill, for mental health. We need a holistic approach.
Okay, that's it. Thank you. Next question. And this question will go first to Jim.
Hi, I'm Paula from Niskayuna. I have a question about spending taxpayer funds on campaign materials. I want to know why Senator Tedisco's campaign mailers were paid for by the state Senate. I'm fine with my tax money being used for letters and pamphlets about bike safety and Lyme disease, but these three mailers here are all about Jim Tedisco and how great he is. I'd also like to hear Michelle Austerlitz comment on campaign ethics.
All right, this goes to Jim first.
Well, first of all, they're not all about Jim Tedisco. They're all about corruption. They're all about Lyme disease, as you mentioned. They're all about human trafficking. They're all about women's health, and you know that. But the fact of the matter is, my last assembly district was 20 minutes from one side to the other. Do you know how long it takes to travel my 49th senatorial district? 2.5 hours up to Old Forge, 2.5 hours back. I'd like to borrow a helicopter if I could. My district is larger than Rhode Island and Delaware combined. It's 2/3 the size of Connecticut. I use social media. I go to every event. Check my Facebook, and you'll find out the events. I interact with the people. But I can't stay in touch with them fully unless I provide snail mail on occasion. Every single one of those went through rigorous evaluation by the ethics committee. They don't talk about campaigns. They don't talk about voting. They don't talk about when the elections are going to be. And they're all informative. You know, my parents were great parents to me. They gave me one golden important rule besides many others. Always tell the truth. Because if you tell the truth, you're always doing the right thing. I always tell the truth in those, and I'm proud of what I've done to get all those things accomplished. But I need to contact my constituents to be transparent, because we're in the most least transparent administration in the history of New York. When Percoco was right next to the governor, and he doesn't know he's rig-bidding and taking bribes, or he does the Moreland Commission, when he gets close to him, he eliminates it. I don't do that. I inform my constituents.
Thank you, Jim.
Those were well within the realm of what was correct to do.
It's time for Michelle.
So thank you, Paula. I also brought my handout, my, I don't know, visual aid. So this is the piece of mail that Paula's talking about. I will not use public dollars to put out campaign material like this. So he didn't break any rules, because it's sent out more than 30 days before the election. And okay, but this is about ethics. This is about using taxpayer dollars and whether you're using hard-earned taxpayer dollars to benefit the taxpayers who earn them or yourself and getting reelected. The power of incumbency is strong. I get it. I do. But at some point, Paula, we should make sure that we hold our representatives to a standard of ethics that we expect from ourselves. I expect that most people in this room, when they received this mailing, thought it came from his campaign fund. It could have, easily could have. He's got the money, I've seen the reports. But he didn't. He used your money to send this out. And I know how much mailings cost. This is tens of thousands of dollars. You footed the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, I'm Misha Rosenberg, and I'm from Niskayuna, New York. I'm here because I'm a mother, and I'm very concerned about safety, not only in our public schools, but everywhere. We now live in a country where there are more guns owned than there are people. Yes, that's right. There are more guns than people. I want to talk about Nicholas Nomkin, who died when he was 12 years old in 2010. He was shot accidentally in Wilton, New York, which is very close to where we stand right now. His parents had a gun, and they didn't store it properly. Mr. Tedisco, you voted against Nicholas's Act, which is the Safe Storage Act when you were in assembly. Why? And I would like to know from Mrs. Austerlitz, what would you do to protect people from
okay.
the prevalence of guns?
Thank you. Thank you. And we're going first to Michelle.
Misha, thank you. That is a heart-wrenching story. Accidents like that happen every day. And as a gun owner, I expect my friends and neighbors who own guns to be responsible. Having safe handling and safe storage is paramount. It saves lives. We need more money to go to education. I want to see billboards up that talk about safe storage and safe handling. And in fact, in a neighboring district, there's a candidate named Aaron Glad who has proposed tax credits for gun safes and trigger locks. I think that's fantastic. I think the more we talk about gun safety, the better. Tragedies like this don't have to happen. It means that somebody was irresponsible with a deadly weapon. We absolutely need to make sure that we have reasonable gun safety measures because you don't get a second chance.
Thank you. Jim?
Yeah, I think the first thing we have to do is enforce the laws we have right now. We have to make sure people who get guns illegally are penalized. People who use them are serious penalties. People who fire them inappropriately. People who take people's lives don't get out on parole like Herman Bell, who pulled the 9/11, got two police persons to come to him, tortured them, and then shot them several times and killed them, and we just paroled them. Those aren't the people, law-abiding citizens, who the Second Amendment talks about. But I would ask you, how about a whole series of families I could talk to you about who had break-ins, and their gun was locked in a safe, and they couldn't get to it, and their entire family was raped by it? You know, a law-abiding citizen should have a gun available, not just for hunting, not just for target practicing, but protect their family. That's a constitutional right. We have some bad people out there in our communities, and there should be responsible gun owners, but those responsible gun owners have the right to have a weapon available to them to protect their household. Because a bigger tragedy than the tragedy, and it is a tragedy, no question about it, is to have entire families wiped out by burglars. And I'll tell you right now, the district I live in, the 49th Senatorial District, up in the northern country, you have no cell phone access. You have no broadband. Basically, they have to know how to use homing pigeons or smoke signals to get somebody to come there in an emergency. If somebody breaks into their house, I'm not going to tell those people to have their guns locked in a safe and have their family destroyed if they're innocent, honest, law-abiding citizens.
Thank you,
they have the right to protect
Thank
their
you.
Family.
Next question.
Hi, my name is Ismat Alam, and I live in Clifton Park. Can you hear me? So my name is Ismat Alam, and I live in Clifton Park. I'm a mother, too, and I'm very concerned about the public schools. So please, can each of you please summarize what you see as the most pressing issues for New York public schools and what you have either done or intend to do to address these issues?
Okay, and the first question goes to Jim.
Yeah, there's a whole series of things that need to be done. First of all, we can't be allowing the governor and the very powerful leaders to take their money into their own districts, high wealth, low need districts, and get the same or more money that places like Schenectady or Gloversville, parts of the district which are high need, low wealth, need that funding in very special ways. And I'm glad we worked on Common Core and we realized that we have to do something about these high stakes tests. I was a teacher, I gave standardized tests, but they can't be used as the holy grail. So we have to change that whole concept. There has to be a whole series of measurements before you're going to ever try to use as a 50% indicator to evaluate a kid or to evaluate a teacher. I carry the bill to stop that from happening. We need a whole set of indicators. The standardized tests were good. They were good for me when I was a teacher because it gave me a point to move forward on. But listen, every child can reach high standards. It's going to take more money for some of those schools. It's going to take more individual attention. It's going to take more specialized teachers. We have places that are urban, that have addiction, that have crime, that have a lack of parenting, that have a joblessness, and we have situations where we have to invest more in them. And I'm working hard to make them invest more in them. I'm the one legislator who has been the most outspoken in terms of adding full foundation aid. You can ask some of the superintendents. You can especially ask Superintendent Spring of the city of Schenectady, which has all those problems. He credits me with expanding programs, and at the same time, he was able to reduce taxes.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Michelle.
Thank you, Ismet. I have two daughters. My husband and I have two daughters. They're 11 and 14, so we have one in middle school and one in high school. So schools and support in schools is very important to our family. Speaking of Schenectady schools, they're owed over $44 million every single year, according to the Foundation Aid Formula. That's a settlement that happened about 12 years ago and has never been paid fully to our schools that are in need in our district. So even Gloversville, Niskayuna schools, they're all owed millions of dollars every single year. And you've got to know what that money could do to support kids in the classroom and make sure that programs are continued. We need a true champion in the Senate to make sure that this is paid out. It hasn't happened yet. And in fact, the formula itself is flawed. We need to look back on that formula and make sure our rural schools are included. They're owed nothing because they were never thought of when that formula was instituted. We need to make sure that they have money because their tax base is dwindling and we need to get them help. With regard to separating teacher evaluations from test scores, I couldn't agree more. And it's really unfortunate that Senator Disco's leadership, his own party leadership, pulled the rug out from under him for his bill to do that. I pledge that when I get to the Senate, I will make sure that a clean bill separating the two is passed so that our teachers are supported and that our school districts have the freedom to make an evaluation process for themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. And next question.
Hi, I'm Nicole. I'm from Galway. My question has to do with the Child Victims Act and our priorities using taxpayer dollars. Advocates of the Child Victims Act have been working for over a decade to pass that bill. And though the Assembly has passed it five times, the Senate has never permitted it to the floor for a vote. There's now a newer version of the Child Victims Act that permits grown victims to who currently have no standing in court to sue because of the statute of limitations.
You need to move to your question.
To sue abusers and the institutions that shelter the abusers. This new provision would not allow these people, the victims, to go to court and would allow taxpayer money to be used through an administrative process to pay victims. I'd like to know from both of you if that's a bill you would support or if you would not support that use of taxpayer dollars for that purpose.
Let's see. Michelle.
Thank you. The Child Victims Act is an act that would extend the statute of limitations and allow victims of childhood sexual assault to name their attackers, to be able to find their day in court, get justice for themselves, and because we know the rate of recidivism in these cases is so high, it would prevent future attacks on our children. So it's critical. I support the Child Victims Act wholeheartedly. In 2017, Senator Todisco said that if this bill made it to the floor, he would vote for it. And then in 2018, he had the opportunity to allow it to the floor. He blocked it along with all other Republicans along party lines to block the Child Victims Act from being heard in the Senate. He said he would vote on it, and then he blocked it from happening. This is unacceptable. We owe more to victims of child sexual assault. I am done. We're all done protecting predators and the institutions that continue to protect them and not our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Jim?
Yeah, I have to repeat myself. You're right to your own opinion, but you're not right to your own set of facts. It's disingenuous to tell people who you want to support you and really have some faith in you and take you seriously to make the statements you've been making. She started out this campaign saying, I was against the Child Victims Act, and she said, I voted against it. Now she switched a little bit. Now it's blocking it. Look, don't take my word for it. Here's the Daily News. I've been the first one in support of the Child Victims Act. Here's the headline. GOP state senator comes out in support of Child Victims Act. That's me. That's me right there. It's in the news. It's not me saying it. And then here's the editorial from the Gazette that endorsed me. Let me tell you what they said. Senator Tedesco is on the right side of the Child Victims Act. He favors making it even stronger by eliminating statutes of limitation on sex crimes, saying 100% of victims should get their day in court. I don't want any statute of limitation. I don't think because you're 28, 30, 35, 40, 100. If the evidence is there and the facts are there, we should go to court and those children should get justice and those perpetrators should be taken off the streets. Now understand this. When she says blocked, it didn't come out of committee. You know why it didn't come out of committee? Because it's not the best bill we should passing. You know this bill only provides justice for 20% of the children who have been abused. 80% are not a part of this. It only brings it up to 28 years of age. I want to eliminate the statute of limitation. That's the truth.
Thank you. Next question.
I'm Del Salmon, and I live in Niskayuna. Needless to say, broadband and cell phone service in Hamilton County is spotty at best and a threat to the health, education, safety, emergency preparedness, and economic development in Hamilton County. One recent example is the 18-hour blackout in Lake Pleasant and the surrounding area that shut down the 911 emergency service because there was no backup. What is your plan to improve broadband and cell phone coverage in Hamilton County?
Okay, and the first answer is Jim.
Yeah, believe it or not, I was out in the Adirondacks at a hearing on this, talking to some of the supervisors. I went to the men's room, and my phone rang. You know who it was from? Governor Andrew Cuomo. Called me in the men's room and started to talk to me about a different. I said, let me ask you something. Out here in the Adirondacks, I'm having a hearing. I'm with some supervisors. You promised them in 2019, by 2019, you'd have broadband. You'd have an agreement with either a Spectrum or another company, and you would fulfill your obligation to provide that. I'll do it, Jimmy. I'll get it done, he said. Well, he's not getting it done. Now he wants to run Spectrum out of the state of New York, and maybe they should be run out of the state of New York because they're not fulfilling their obligation. But you've got to have a leadership here with your governor, her governor, part of that downstate thing I was talking about, who comes up in a kayak up there in the North Country and canoes around a little bit, but doesn't come through when we need him to get the job done. The Senate, and I believe the Assembly, and I believe senators and assemblymen want to have full coverage in this state. But we have the ability from the second floor to negotiate that with us and help us to get that done. Because he does an awful lot of things unilaterally. In fact, I'm getting to believe he thinks the three branches of government are me, myself, and I. And they aren't the three branches of government.
Thank you, Jim. Michelle?
Thank you, Del. I do need to take a few moments and just correct our last exchange over the Child Victims Act. Senator Tedesco is right. In 2017, he promised that if it came to the floor, he would vote for it, exactly what I just said. And in 2008, he voted to block it from getting to the floor. Now, your question is about Hamilton County. Broadband, lack of broadband, is a huge problem to economic development and life, frankly, up there. I've talked to so many people that struggle with the fact that they don't have broadband. Kids can't take distance learning classes, businesses. Well, you can't start a business. And in fact, in some towns, they don't even have one more hookup available. And so if you move into town, if you build a house, you can't get cable. You can't even get it. So I support Governor Cuomo's initiative to tell Comcast that we are breaking its contracts. And I've heard from workmen that they are, in fact, working much harder at getting it done. But the truth is, we're going to have to rely on technological advances. Things like micro-trenching, and making sure that maybe in the last mile we use wireless. There are things that we can do using technology that we know to attain broadband throughout the region. It is unsafe and we need to fix it, and we need to fix it fast. It's about the state investing in our rural communities. We want rural communities to thrive. I mean, we all love going up to the lakes. We need folks who are going to work at the marinas and continue to enjoy their quiet rural lifestyle. So thank you.
Okay, that was Michelle. And now we're going to go to a new question. It looks like we have time for another two or three. So I think that's going to be it, because we want to end at 9. Okay.
Okay, hi. My name is Jay Zucker. I'm from Clifton Park. And earlier there was some allusion made to the estate tax, but I think it got garbled with a bunch of other taxes. So very simple question. Do you support repealing the New York State estate tax? Why or why not?
Thank you. And the first answer would be Michelle.
Thank you, Jay. I am not in favor of repealing the estate tax, and I'll tell you why. It favors the folks at the very top and would penalize all the rest of us. It would essentially, well, the estate tax is imposed upon estates of $5 million or more. And if we lost that revenue, it would require the rest of us to pay $1.3 billion. Our greatest problem right now is the growing divide between the haves and have-nots. You're seeing it every day in families that are struggling, even though they tell us there's more and more employment. People aren't making a living wage. People can't save money. The average American household doesn't have any more than $1,000 in savings. So I'm pretty sure the healthcare savings accounts won't work. But what we need to do is grow our middle class, not penalize them, not give more tax credits to the folks at the top. We've seen what it's done to our federal budget. We've seen the fact that our federal deficit is ballooning and they're looking for social programs to pay it back. This is not where our country and our state needs to go. We need somebody who's going to really be responsible with our tax earned, with our hard-earned tax dollars, and make sure that we're working on growing our middle class and making sure that people are upwardly mobile, not stagnant, not feeling so left behind. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Michelle. Jim?
Yeah, I certainly support the elimination. I mean, we have enough taxes in this state. We have enough taxes in this nation. I'll ask you a simple question. Who makes our money work better, us or the government of the United States or New York State? Look at Social Security. They come to us and they say, well, we're going to have to adjust that. We're going to have to move up the age level. This is your money. You put it in there. You know why it's going bankrupt? Because they took it and they spent the money that was yours. I'm not finished yet, sir. This is not a debate between you and me.
Please, please, sir, the questioner doesn't answer, doesn't have a conversation. Just let him answer.
And your question was, am I for it or against it? And I answered that right at the beginning. I'm against the estate tax, okay? So now I'm finishing my answer. How much time did he take there? Like a, okay. So if I ask you, sorry, I don't like to be interrupted. I know you wouldn't want to be interrupted either. Who works your money better? Certainly, they destroyed Social Security, and you gave them a lot of money. Now they want to take money that people have worked hard for, incentivized to work hard for, who want to leave it to their families. And I think when they leave it to their families, they'll invest that better. Maybe they'll continue businesses. They'll expand businesses. They'll buy houses. They'll create more jobs. I think if there's more money in taxpayers' pockets, middle-class taxpayers' pockets, that investment will help the small businesses stay in New York right now. Because what we have now is governmental malpractice. We keep trying to cure a disease, but we don't want to solve the disease. If a doctor knew he could cure a disease, but he kept just providing a bigger and bigger a safety net or cure, the safety net was to get across a bridge, which becomes bereft of opportunity in New York State. Why do they build a bigger safety net, our governments? Because then people have to keep coming for them, and then they have a lifetime job. That's not what government is all about. Our role should be to remove obstacles for each and every one of our constituents so they can be everything they can be with the God-given talents they've been given. Not take all their money and in a socialized way, spend it the way they think they should.
All right, thank you, Jim. All right, we're going to do two more questions then, and then that will be it until, and we'll have the closing statements after that.
Hi, I'm Mark Hyland. I'm from Glenville, New York. I'm very worried about the impact of the Trump administration's tax cuts. I can't understand why our local politicians aren't jumping up and down about the limits placed on state and local tax deductions and all the money that's going to leave New York and go to Washington, D.C. and never come back. I'd like to know what each of you think about the impact of the Trump administration tax cuts on New York, and what, if anything, can you do as a state senator to help?
All right, this question goes to Jim.
Yeah, we did jump up and down. In fact, in the budget, our conference made sure that the SALT deductions would stay in place in New York State. They do stay in place in New York State for your mortgage and your for property taxes, not at the federal government. But the fact of the matter is 80% of my constituents, and I represent my constituents. Look, it's not about my values or going there and saying what's good for my family or for me. It's about finding out what's good for the constituents I represent. That's what a representative does. And I know Michelle keeps talking about I don't have her values, and they're not my values. Well, our values have to take second place sometimes. We have moral issues which we have to stick to, but we have to reach out and find out what our constituents' concerns are. 80% of my constituents do better with this tax cut that has come from the federal government. Now, who does it affect? All those people the governor and my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say we should be going after. We should be taxing the rich. When the federal government taxes our rich, we don't like it. We just like to take money from the rich in New York State. But 80% of the people I represent are doing well with this in a 49th senatorial district. They're having better tax cuts than they had before this bill was put into place. Now, why are we suffering? Because we have Wall Street, because we're the highest tax state in the nation. 48 to 49 other states, everybody in those states loves it because we're out of bounds with our taxes.
Thank you, Jim.
We've got to moderate those taxes.
Thank you. Michelle?
Thank you for your question, Mark, but I am glad to hear that Senator DiDisco realizes we do not share the same values. It's been very apparent by our answers tonight. We are suffering in New York. We are under attack by Washington. Make no mistake, the SALT deductions have been eliminated. I met a guy in Stratford who said, yeah, thanks for that $7 refund. This is a man who lives in a very modest farmhouse with very little, and he got $7 back. That's not tax relief. We're struggling, and the SALT deduction is just one example of how we're under attack from Washington, so thank you. What is really apparent, too, is that we are struggling. Our taxes are high in New York, and there's so much that we can be doing to reduce our taxes. Things like state assuming control of Medicaid that will save us money in administration. Things like having a single-payer health care that will save us by the power of the consumer and the transparency we'll have. We will save money by the fair funding of our public schools and alleviating our school districts from paying so much when they self-insure for their health insurance. There are cuts to be made. We can save money in taxes.
Thank you, Michelle.
We just haven't had the leadership to do it.
Thank you, Michelle. Okay, this is going to have to be our last question. I'm sorry for those who have waited in line. How many more questions are there?
Now that's
five
a one-hour debate.
I will stay all night if you want.
What did you say, Jim?
I said we had a time limit, didn't we? I don't know. How long
do we have
to go?
I think we have a time limit. I think people are ready to go home.
If I don't get home, there's going to be a mess in the house. The dogs are there. So.
I'm sorry, but we just can't do all the questions tonight. So this will be the last question, and then we'll have closing statements. And perhaps the candidates will stay afterwards if people want to talk to you.
For a while, yeah.
All right. Thank you. Go.
My name is Teresa. And I'm a mother, an educator, and a grandparent, newly, thank you.
Grandparent.
I'm older than I look. I realize, this is for you, Jim.
So am I.
At some point in your 16 terms as an assembly member, you decided to support term limits. In the early 2000s, a bill you sponsored, formerly A4803, found itself in committee sitting there for some time. By 2009, you backtracked your support of the term limits and joined the GOP in supporting Mayor Bloomberg for a third term in New York City. From 2010 to 2016, you seemed to flip-flop between being for and against term limits. My question is two parts. Do you plan on serving in the Senate because now you're back at supporting term limits, extended term limits? So do you plan on serving in the Senate for another 44 years? My grandson will
be
seeing
you. Make it quick, your time is up.
Well, yeah, I took my time talking. Do you plan on serving in the Senate for another 44 years? If so, how do you plan to stay relevant to your constituents?
I'd love to be there for another 44 years. Let's see, I'd be 100 and something then. But let me respond to that by saying this. First of all, it's a good story, but it's not true again. You have your right to your own opinion, but not your own set of facts. So if you want to interrupt me, you can. I guess that's the technique of liberal progressives. They interrupt you when you're talking. And they go, oh, when you check them on that. The fact of the matter is,
Excuse me, will the audience be quiet now? And the questioner, you're done.
I've been saying,
just,
stand.
What?
Stand.
I don't know why you're saying that. I'm asking the audience to be quiet. Jim?
Thank you. The fact of the matter is, I've been for term limits just about ever since I was elected. And it's very cute what you say, because guys who don't want term limits always say that to the guys who do. Why don't you term limit yourself if you really believe in it? Well, if I term limit myself, what's going to happen is the fox is going to be watching the hen house. That's exactly what they want us to do. They want guys like me. And I'm going to read what the Gazette said about guys like me. While it might be tempting for voters to look at the gridlock and dysfunction of the state legislature and start from scratch with someone new, that's not always the wisest course if your representative isn't part of the problem. And that's me they're talking about, all right? When you go to a salon and you like your haircut for 20 years, you don't want him to leave. When your garage mechanic does the right job, but he's the guy who does the right job. But I will leave. If we can pass that. But if I leave, they got to backfill me with someone who's for term limits. Then they've got to elect more people. You should be going after your Democratic colleagues, none of which support term limits, okay? So you're on the wrong side of this issue. I'm on the right side. I'll leave when we have the votes for term limits because of the corruption. But if we didn't have that corruption
Thank
and
you,
we
Jim.
Passed the bills that we've passed for corruption, we wouldn't have to have term limits.
All right, Michelle?
I'm so sorry, Teresa, for the condescension that was Senator Todisco's tone, civility matters, and leadership. I support term limits simply for the fact that I will never be a career politician. I support a measure offered by Assemblywoman Warner for 12 years total in the Assembly and the Senate. We need to take money out of politics. That means extending it to four-year terms so that half of money is wasted and our time spent fundraising. We need to reduce that. Corruption is a lot more than term limits, though. It's about transparency. I want you to be able to go on my website and look to see what grants I've supported, where the money is going in our district. I want you to be able to click through and see what contractors are being hired on it, and if they're using union labor, because supporting union labor is important. I want every investment of our hard-earned taxpayer dollars, not just to be for the bridges, but for our people as well, and to make sure that safety is paramount, and we're using highly skilled labor. But moreover, I want you to be able to click over and see where my campaign contributions have come through to make sure that there is complete transparency in all of our dealings. I want DiNapoli, our comptroller, to have oversight. There's so much we can be doing on a holistic level to make sure that corruption is dealt with in Albany. No longer can we maintain the pay-for-play atmosphere, and we can't do that if we continue to reelect the same representatives. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your questions. I'm sorry that we couldn't take them all. I'm very sorry. We are going to have closing statements, and again, I would like to caution both candidates to give a positive view of your vision for how you would like to deal with the issues that are most important to you. This is not the time to attack your opponent. All right, and we're starting with Michelle.
So thank you again to the League of Women Voters for hosting this forum. It's been very educational. This is a difficult time for New Yorkers. In many ways, we're under attack for Washington, as we talked about earlier. They want to drill for oil on our shores. Our reproductive rights are being threatened. Our tax bill is ballooning our deficit. They're taking money from the hardworking middle class and giving it to the wealthy. And we watch the divide grow. Hate speech, discrimination, and bias are ever-present dangers. Our state legislators are our last defense on issues like these. You have the choice of two candidates, and our responses were very clear tonight. The difference is clear. I'd like to thank Senator Disco for his decades of service, but it's time for change. It's time to protect New Yorkers and the folks who live in the 49th. I will not shy away from difficult conversations. They're the most important ones to have. I will move New York forward by first listening, being a role model in civility, by working across the aisle, always for your benefit.
I'm sorry, I didn't see this though. All right, Jim.
Thank you. I want to thank you, Ann, as the moderator, League of Women Voters, and I do want to thank Michelle for her interest. And she's pretty scrappy herself, I think. One thing I think I've proved, though, this headline is correct. Says Tedisco, a scrappy, effective state senator. I don't back down when I believe I'm right on behalf of my constituents. I don't back down from anybody. I don't back down from people who have tremendous power in the New York State Legislature. I stand up, and that's what a representative does. We passed a whole series of bills to protect against corruption here. A database for deals so we know where there was bid rigging things. Letting the comptroller have eyes. Outside independent budget committees. The Democrats wouldn't support any of them in the New York State Assembly. I want to close by not what I say, because Mary Okomo once said, if a politician doesn't blow his own horn, there's never any music. And we've had to blow our own horn. I want to read you the last paragraph of this endorsement from the Gazette. Jim Tedisco has long been an effective and vocal advocate for his constituents, no matter which house he served in, and
Jim,
no matter whether he was
up
in the majority
or minority. I don't know how long
minority,
that goes, but your time is up.
Voters in the 49th Senate District should reelect him. Thank you so much for being here.
All right, I want to thank you all for demonstrating your civic concern.